Oh, isn't that interesting? I mean, I had one site that just absolutely went off the Richter scale. It was cranking in AdSense like a maniac. So, you know, I gave it to my team and said,
"This is Super Fast Business with James Schranko. James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast."
James Schranko here. I've got my good friend Lukey Luke Moulton back. Welcome, Luke.
How are you, James?
This is becoming regular.
It is becoming regular. It's irregular regular.
Well, you know, the thing I like is you do have availability from time to time, and you're a little more reliable than my other podcast co-hosts at the moment.
Couldn't help yourself, could you?
Well, it's a fair pot shot. Besides that...
You know it's only going to upset him.
Well, that's kind of the intent, but anyway. Yeah, of course, we're talking about our good friend Timbo Reed from freedomotion.com and Small Business Big Marketing. Big shout out. Both great podcasts to listen to as well.
Yeah, he's been doing a wonderful job without me, James.
Well, I really need your help this week because the topic is something that you have probably got a passion for and a fair bit of experience with, and we're going to be delving into the whole website stuff in terms of maybe buying, selling, trading, whatever you want to call it, and I'm going to sort of look to you for a little bit of leadership on this episode.
Well, yeah, James, I have had a bit of experience. Look, I wouldn't say that I'm the expert's expert, but I've was the marketing manager at Flipper for some time, and I've done a little bit of buying and selling myself. And probably one of my larger sites, I spent a fair bit of coin on. So I suppose I've been down the path of doing due diligence in terms of buying decent size sites. So. Yeah, there's nothing like putting your own money on the line to make you learn how to acquire a site.
This will be good because I've probably come at it from a very different perspective from the investor point of view. I've slowly acquired a little portfolio of domains and then developed some of those into websites. And I've also bought entire websites in clumps of, you know, a couple of hundred at a time. And I now find my business at the point where we've kind of reached the capacity, and then now we're zooming in on the bits that we want to focus on, which has, of course, left a little bit of a surplus. And I'm starting to approach the selling side of this. So I've done some buying, done some selling, and I've certainly tied up my own capital in these investments, and a good many hundreds of thousands of dollars out there sitting somewhere in the internet of my own capital, sitting in these certain websites here and there. So it should be a fun discussion.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely. So do you want to? Where do you want to start? Should we start on buying, or do you want to start on selling?
Oh, why don't we talk about buying a website? Because you know, this reminds me of the there's this Jewish saying. Some guy Saul says to this guy, how much is the watch? And he goes, "Oh, it depends. Are we buying or are we selling?" So it's a great sort of expression around the value of stuff. It depends on which side of the fence you're on. So it's funny when you have to put on the hat to buy something and then you have to put on the hat to sell things. And there's a lot of psychology going on, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I suppose it's like that that old real estate adage, you know, what's a property worth? Well, it's worth what someone's willing to pay for it. But it does obviously get there is a little bit of science behind it, and hopefully we can touch on a few of those points.
Okay, so let's go into the buying a website. Where do you want to tackle this one from?
Well, I suppose if you're motivated to buy, I think you've got to look at the reasons why you want to buy. So, you know, first of all, are you looking to buy some passive income, essentially like, I guess, investing in shares or investing in property? You know, do you want to be able to acquire and to a degree let it sit there and turn over money? I certainly think in more recent times, James, it's a lot more difficult to do that with websites than what it was previously. I think you do have to have a team to maintain. And I suppose the other aspect is, you know, do you want to buy an online business? Are you looking to, you know, get out of the day job and buy an online business that you're willing to to nurture, maintain, do sales, do marketing, build a team around. So I think the first thing is to look at your motives and question those.
Right. So, I mean, how viable is it that someone's going to be able to buy a website and quit their day job? I guess part of that depends on how much they earn in their day job and how much capital they've got to put into a website. I imagine a website making enough to have an average salary is not going to be cheap to get originally, is it? Or are there bargains out there?
Look, I think, there are bargains out there. I think I was fortunate enough to find one a couple of years ago, but they are certainly few and far between. And I think these days it's a bit of a rule of thumb, you know, don't hold me to this, but it's usually an index of two. And by an index of two, I mean, if there's an online business that's making, 100 grand a year, then you're probably going to pay in excess of 200 grand to acquire that business. So it really is getting towards, what you pay to acquire a bricks and mortar business, which are probably more like an index of five these days.
Right. So what sort of things can someone do to identify a good business to buy?
Well, I suppose it's like doing your due diligence when you want to buy a bricks and mortar business. I mean, you really want proof, first and foremost, proof of income. So someone's selling a website, they're stating that they're getting X amount of traffic per month, that there's X amount of income per month. So how can you approach that seller and ask them to prove those metrics? I mean, obviously, most of us are familiar with Google Analytics. So you can look at Google Analytics data and see that there's a certain amount of traffic. Hopefully, businesses, if it's a business that they're actually keeping books, you might be able to get access to PayPal transactions, or at least a proof of PayPal transactions. I mean, in terms of doing your due diligence on a business, obviously analytics data. Have a look at PageRank. Have a look at how old the website is. How long's it been transacting for? Is there a good history of transactions? You know, is it a business that's only been operating for six months and it's done a WSO, a Warrior Forum special offer? And they are certainly, if you're looking in marketplaces online, they are something that you really need to look out for. Quite often people will launch a special offer and there'll be a nice big peak in revenue and then it'll disappear to nothing. So that's, I think that's certainly something to watch out for.
Are there traffic sources that are more valuable or less valuable? So let me give you an example. Let's say a website's getting 90% of its traffic from just SEO results versus a website that's getting, say, 90% of its traffic from an AdWords campaign, you know, and they can verify this and validate it. Is one more attractive than the other?
Well, I think this is a matter of looking at the expenses in the business as well. I mean, obviously, if it's AdWords, you're paying for the traffic. So at the end of the day, what's the profit on that? Whereas a business that's an online business that's getting traffic from organic sources, obviously there's less cost involved, but there might be maintenance in other areas. You know, obviously link building, SEO, there's time in there. Particularly these days, there's also some risk attached with that. So what's more valuable? I think something that's more valuable is a business that has that's less reliant. What's your saying, James? Don't have a one-legged horse.
Not be single source dependent or single point sensitive.
Yeah, and I think that in buying an online business, I think that's a really important thing. You know, if you're solely organic traffic based and deriving income from that single source, then that, particularly in this day and age, that could be risky. So I think looking for a mixture of traffic sources is an important thing as well.
So where do you find these sites to buy?
Well, obviously there is flipper.com, but it tends to be like finding a diamond in the rough or a needle in a haystack to find a good online business. There are actually, just if you just do a search for businesses for sale, quite a lot of good businesses for sale websites will have an online businesses section as well. And you do need to be careful in those avenues as well. There are some people trying to sell, let's say, crappy online businesses. But I think there's also approaching people, James. I mean, what sort of experience have you had in buying valuable properties?
Probably one of my more interesting ones was when there was this product put out in the marketplace a few years ago, which was called MSN Ranking Loophole. And it purported to be able to show you how to set up your websites to take advantage of Microsoft's ranking index. And the thing was, you'd set up all these blogs and then you'd rotate links on them all the time and push up money pages. And so all these people, especially the Warrior Forum, they went out and set up these blog networks. They got their multi-IP SEO hosting. They set up WordPress. They had, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, 200 blogs. And very few of them actually got success with that business model for whatever reason. Maybe the product was no good. Maybe maybe they didn't implement it properly. I'm not saying I could be sure either way. But I recognized that there was all these people who got to month two and month three of their hosting and they're like, oh, crap, I can't afford this. I'm not making any money and this is just burning a hole in my pocket. So I went into that discussion about that product and I said, I buy websites. And I had people sending me private messages and they'd send me a list of their sites. And at the time I had a pretty switched on techie silent partner in this project, and he would go and sniff around the site and have a look at some of the things you talked about, analytics, and we'd make a decision on what we felt the value was. And I started snapping up these sites, and in one batch I bought over 200 websites in one go. Wow. And they were all, you know, on domains and all pre-owned and everything else. So they were all set up, but they just weren't set up right. I had to go and reconfigure them. I had to move them to a proper hosting solution. They were all on like those horrid add-on domains. I hate those things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like they piggybacked on each other in the hosting. So I basically renovated them all, went and fixed them up, changed the permalink structure, put fresh content on them. In many cases, I just demolished them and started again. But they were on mature domains and they had rankings and I was able to redirect the old things. And I ran that network for quite some time. And that actually has formed the core base of part of my expansive sort of blog holdings. And recently, I've started selling some of them off and I made certainly made my investments back and some, a little bit extra, with the services that we run. But that was how I acquired a lot of sites in one hit, by identifying an off-market sort of trench where people aren't – it's not an obvious marketplace and I'm not competing with many other people. I'm like – I'm actually the savior almost. I'm coming and stepping in to take over their hosting account. Here, I'll give you some cash. I'll take over your accounts. You push the domains across to me and you can walk away from this, cut your losses. And it worked out well for everyone. So that was an off-market thing.
Brilliant. I think that's the best way to find good opportunities. And there's obviously a housing or property analogy in there as well. You know, buying something that you see that's maybe a bit unloved, a bit run down, but you can see some potential in if you just to, you know, give it a slap of paint and maybe add another room on and tart it up a bit.
So that's really like the seller's tactic from my experience, isn't it? To demonstrate a value, the intangibles or the potential, and make someone believe in that. But I think being a good buyer is when you see that, but the seller doesn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I suppose, that with the one large acquisition that I made, I suppose that's what I saw. You know, the person that I bought from didn't really perhaps have a good appreciation for what he'd built, and wasn't able to take it to the next level. You know, it looked crappy. The ad placement was terrible. There was no sort of affiliate or ancillary offers that he was able to make. He wasn't building a list. Well, actually, that's not true. He was building a list, but not very efficiently. So being able to walk in and I guess make those tweaks, and I think that's where if you're buying a website or buying an online business, I think you need to look at where your skill sets lie or where you are willing to build a team that have certain skill sets. So, you know, whether you've got You know, whether you know about SEO, whether you have a publishing background and can create content, or whether you're a good designer, you can certainly, if you've got those skills, you can value add.
That's great. I mean, because people don't know what they don't know. So firstly, if you're aware of something that can be done with a website that the current owner doesn't know, then there's potential for you and they may not see that. And then the second side of it is, yeah, you may have resources lined up that they just don't have or can't get access to. So I think I've done both of those things as a buyer and a seller. I've bought things that people couldn't fully develop, and I've also sold things that I'm not prepared to develop, even though I've got resource. I just have to say, well, I'm going to partition this part of my business off and just not put any more effort into it because I now have greater opportunities to focus on. So if I know how to 10x something, I'm not going to focus on the 2x. But for someone who only knows how to 1x, a 2x opportunity looks really, really attractive for them.
Absolutely. I think you touched on something there, James, too, that perhaps more recently than before is I think now it's better to be focused on a smaller portfolio than a larger portfolio, given the recent Google changes. Is that something that you're finding in your business?
Totally, because I mean I have built up my team now. The first 18 months of my team, we were just developing sites. We were just building, creating content, getting them looking nice, ranking them, and they formed the foundation that I would later build my service businesses around. And they gave us that sort of anchor. But it is very, very expensive. This is what people don't realize. To do content and to do design and to do SEO is actually expensive. And even if you think you're going to do it from Fiverr or whatever, the time it takes to go and find someone and get the job done and check it and realize it's shit and then get it done again and all of that, that's half a day gone. And your time is valuable. You ask any parent or someone with another job, time is super valuable, right?
It sure is. And look, I've been through the same process as well in terms of setting up a certainly smaller network compared to yours, James. But, you know, if you're taking a domain and then you're setting up WordPress and then if you don't have a large team and you're outsourcing the content, you know, even if it's $6 to $8 an article, to get a decent amount of content on a site over time and to keep building that content, it's expensive, particularly when you don't know when payday is.
Well, I mean, even if you do have a team, you still have a cost for each thing. So let's say it ends up costing you $4 or $5 an article and you have 1,000 websites and you want to stick, like one page a week. That's a thousand posts a week at $4 each. I mean, that is actually quite expensive, right? So like when you realize the numbers, it's just like, whoa, okay, so you've got to have a way to make money from these things if you're going to put the money in. And that's where I think a lot of the marketplace is created. People come to that realization, well, I'm not getting out what I'm putting in, or I don't think I will get out what I could put in, so therefore this is no longer part of my system. So what I've done is, in fact, I'm going to develop that story of the first 200 sites because that actually turned out quite interesting. Would you like to know what happened next?
I'd love to, James.
I actually went put AdSense on a lot of them because I figured that it would be good research. So over a year, I let them just run, and I went into my analytics account and I actually did some filtering, and I filtered by performance results by site and just took the top four sites of all the 200, which ones over a year had made the most AdSense revenue. And I went and had a look at them, and I picked, you know, I figured out what category they in, what, you know, these are the winners. This is like the top few percent. And then I went and got 50 websites made around each of the four top topics. So that was another 200 websites. So that was basically building with the idea in mind that these are profitable markets. And so I basically added another 200 sites to the portfolio, but there was like 50 of each of the top performers of the first 200.
And obviously that turned out well?
it turned out great because a lot of them, had replicatable results. So hang on, these are going well. And there's actually a good correlation between the high-paying niches and the markets that tend to have good service revenue for the other businesses that we supply. So one of the markets, for example, was in like the plastic surgery niche. And if you have 50 websites in plastic surgery type niche and then you want to go and do SEO services for a plastic surgeon, it's kind of a no-brainer that you can help them with thematically related links. One of the other niches was, as it turned out, the downloads market, like downloads, free download. People go online to download stuff for free, believe it or not. And the AdSense is really strong in that market for some reason. Maybe they're just trying to, someone's advertising to them with free accounts or whatever. I'm not sure. But those ones have less value for me as a service business. So what happens is over time, as my business evolves, I think, well, I have less need for this type of site now. I'll basically sell them. So I just put a line through my sites. I said to the team, well, okay, let's just categorize this. What are the top 100? Like aside from our sales sites that sell things, which is like a couple of dozen, what are the top 100 sites that we want that spread us around categories, right? Then what are the next 350? And then what's everything after that? And that left us a lot of sites. And we're just working our way through getting rid of them. And then there's, of course, a bunch of domain names that I never developed at all. And I now know I'm not going to develop them. I'm just not likely to get to them ever because there's just so many. So I go in stage one of clear out is, okay, I go and just turn some of my auto renews off. This domain's so crap that I don't even want to sell it. I'm going to turn off auto renew. I'm going to list it on the marketplace on the domain registrar. That's like the lazy way out. The second lazy way out is, okay, it's a pretty good domain, but I probably won't keep it if I have to renew it. So I'm going to sell it, but I'll sell it cheap, like $19. I'll stick it on my thing, and that's a front-end offer. Maybe someone who buys it would buy a website from me for $199 and then do rankings.
And if someone was looking to buy one of those websites, James, where would they find them?
Ah, well, you see, I set up a website to sell my website.
You're supposed to say, I'm glad you asked.
No, because it sounds like a big setup, and I didn't actually pop that. But
I know, mate. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm just teasing.
But I figured, rightly or wrongly, I figured I don't want to go to Flipper and sell my sites there. I want to create my own marketplace because I've got an audience. I can set up a site easily, and I can promote and market my own things. And I'd rather own the race course than be the racehorse on someone else's race course, because I've learnt about ownership and control. And in the process of selling my websites and domains at vredirect.com, I'm actually creating another business, another asset that could be sold when I'm finished. Like the last website I sell might be, well, VRE Direct's for sale now. We've successfully sold 1,200 websites. Here are the stats. This is what the cost of the sites. This is the profit we made. If you have websites to sell, you may very well want to buy this established brand and domain from me. So, that's the end game for that site.
Can I ask you something about that, James, just in regards to putting all your websites up there? Was there any reluctance to, I guess, air what essentially is a fairly large network of sites? Was there a consideration around, hang on, maybe there's a few domains here or there's a few sites here that I'm not overly proud of. Did you ever question that?
No. I mean, obviously these are the ones I don't want anymore. So firstly, if someone looked at it and go, why would you have that? I think, well, he's selling it. He doesn't need it anymore. So that's sort of justification in itself. Of all the sites I've got, these are the ones that I currently have no plan for because I've got other, And anyone who knows me, and most people coming to this site do, they know I've got domains that are 15 years old. I've got some domains from 1996, 97, 98. I've got PR3s and 4s and really good two-word brandables. I think they'll forgive me for having a freedownloads.net or something because that was just part of my – when I buy 200 websites – there's going to be 30 or 40 in there that I wouldn't have ever registered in the first place. I wouldn't go out of my way to register some of those domain names, but they just come with the batch. And if you can buy 200 sites in bulk and get a deal, you'll take the good with the bad, and you'll develop the ones that you want to run on, and you'll let go of the ones you don't want to run on. But it doesn't mean they're all bad sites. They're just not perfect for me, and I have other things that I can choose from. So imagine if you like I was a horse breeder and I had the world's best stable and I had like 100 horses, but I really only wanted to commit the resources of the hay and the water and the barn and electricity and the trainers for the top 50. It doesn't mean the other 50 are no good for someone. The other 50 are probably way better than other people's best. So yeah. I don't care putting them up there, and I'm sure people will go and look at them and reverse engineer them and see what's there and find out what server they're on and all that. But you know what? I work on the assumption that people can find that stuff out anyway. I'm under no illusion that all of this is super secret squirrel. But we're not doing anything wrong with these sites other than sticking original articles and putting them up on the internet. You know, we're not doing anything illegal, unethical, shady or whatever. So, yeah. I mean, you know, Google knows where my sites are. They're all attached to Webmaster Tools and analytics. So, you know, what are people going to do? And even if they want to try and copy me, if they want to go and replicate a couple of thousand sites, go for your life, because they don't know which ones are profitable. They don't know which ones aren't. In fact, one of the sites I'm selling right now for $299, I know I paid $800 just for that domain. But I couldn't be bothered making a big argument for why I should sell it for more and all that. Probably at the time it might have been 2 a.m. and maybe I overpaid, but I'm happy just to let it go, and someone will get a real bargain from it. And I know there's other ones that have page one rankings already and they're a perfect fit for someone else's business. And I've also got domains that could just as easily be somebody's actual name. I know there's like 4 or 5 of them on Facebook right now, and I could probably sell that for a lot more to those particular people. But I've got my resource cut point, and I'm better to go and focus on building my SEO business another 10 or 20 grand this month than to worry about eking an extra $300 from my domain.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think this is an important point too, James. When someone's buying from, for example, someone they know and someone with integrity, there's certainly less likelihood of buying something that's going to be, let's say, a lame horse, to use your horse analogy.
Yeah, well, you know, there's people out there who spoof PR and stuff, like they ramp up a PR to 6 by pointing a PR 6 domain to it, wait for the update, and then quickly sell them all and move the PR 6 domain off and move it on to the next one. Like, none of that is going to happen with – I mean, there's no recourse going to happen with the stuff that I'm selling, because everything is as is, and it's like I clearly say I'm selling these as is. Do your own research and checks. You know, here's what it is, and there's nothing contrived or whatever. And in most cases, I'm making no income claims at all, with the exception of ones that I've turned into a little business, which I have actually recently done as well. I've sold little sort of ready to go business, and based on your methodology, I think I've sold some of these too cheap.
Absolutely. Look, I think, you know, I think it is like, you know, buying from a Harvey Norman versus buying from a no-name brand overseas that there is no trust behind. So yeah, look, I think you know, people can safely buy from, you know, someone like yourself, James, who is putting it out there and obviously doesn't want anything coming back to bite him in the ass.
No, not at all. I have high brand values, and I want to be around in years to come. So you have to conduct yourself with integrity. And I don't know. I mean, I haven't actually used marketplaces to buy. The other place that I bought domains from was, you go into somewhere like the DN forum, and you can find people selling domains. But once you buy a domain from them, then you go on a sort of internal house list, and you seem to get offered domains that just don't ever pop up anywhere for sale. And I bought quite a few off market, so to speak.
And was that a good experience?
Yeah, I had them. I basically say, well, they come back to you, say, oh, I've got these ones, and I go, no, look, I only want .coms, and I only want like 2-word brandables. So then they start looking around for them for you. So you got like these agents looking for things that they know that they can sell to you, and they're sort of squirreling them out. And I got quite a few like that. They'd come back and say, oh, look, I've got this one here. What do you think about this? And I'm like, yeah, I like that. How much? And then you make an agreement and then you buy it and send them over. After the first transaction, quite often they'll just move to PayPal or whatever if you started on escrow.com.
Perhaps it's a good point to touch on, James, when you are perhaps transacting with someone who you don't know, like, and trust, and that is, how do you protect yourself? And escrow is certainly one of them. Do you want to explain what escrow is?
Yep. So when you're starting to talk more valuable stuff, you might want to use a service like that, and a lot of people will insist on it. I used that for my higher value sale recently. It's basically you log on there and you – If you're the seller, you can just log on and put in the details of what you're selling and the person who's buying it, and they get sent an email saying this is the deal. Do you agree? And they say yes, and then it asks them to put the money into the account. They put the money in the account, and then I get sent an email as the seller saying the money is in the account. Now you can send the website or the domain.
And that's in the escrow account.
Yes, so it's not in my account. But it's not in the customer's account.
So it's almost like it's being held in trust.
It is. And what it really establishes is that they actually have the money. Like, if you don't go through that step, then you could send them the domain and they say, ha ha, see you later. So the next step is you send them the domain and then they get sent an email that says, have you got the domain? You know, is it what you expected? And they go, yes. And then basically they release the funds and the money comes across to you. So it's a more controlled way of moving the money, but it does establish that they actually have the funds and that they're cleared and ready to be transferred into your bank account.
And it's good from both points of view. It's good for both the buyer and for the seller, because it's essentially putting them that money. The money goes into trust, and until both parties agree that they're happy with the deal, then the funds are released.
And this is the important part. As the seller, you know, they're not going to be able to put in a fee reversal or a chargeback claim with their
which they can do with PayPal.
They can do with PayPal, and I believe it happens in some of the dodgy markets. I mean, I've bought a lot of domains secondhand, like hundreds and hundreds of them, and I've only had a few little hiccups. But you know, for the sites that I'm selling for you know, $19.99, $2.99, I'm just using credit card or PayPal. You know, because I figure if someone's going to go to the hassle of rip me off, get my website, and then do a chargeback, you know, it's almost not worth $200 of my time to go through the hassle, and I don't want to eat away all my profits from escrow. So I'll go with the more streamlined process. But, you know, thankfully I'm dealing with people who have integrity so far. I haven't had any disputes, any concerns. One guy bought a domain, thought it was a net, but it was an org, and said, you know, I thought this was a net. And I'm like, well, it was listed as an org. It's on the site as an org. I got the like last auto-save versions of WordPress. I can see that it's always been listed as an org. He goes, we don't want an org. I'm like, well, just send it back. I changed, you know, just reversed the transaction. That was fine. He just made an error, and it was all fine. He was polite about it, and I was polite about it. But yeah, you got to be careful, you know, with any type of transaction, and the higher the stakes, the more effort you should go to make sure that you're not being part of a fraud.
There is a little bit of a way if you're hell bent on using PayPal, if you're a seller, to make sure you don't get a chargeback, you can actually ship, for example, a backup on DVD or a thumb drive, and actually ship a physical item and record the shipping details, and therefore there's it just makes it a lot harder for the buyer to dispute and do a refund request.
Well, I don't know if I'm right or wrong with this, but I think with digital goods there isn't really any recourse.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm suggesting if you change it to a physical good, it can help.
No, I thought that they don't allow chargebacks on digital goods.
Oh, right. Sorry, beg your pardon.
Yeah. So I meant sort of the opposite. But in any case, I've had so few issues with these matters to date because I don't really have a hypey sales process, and I'm mostly dealing with people who are, you know, straight up, thankfully. But if you, I think what we're suggesting here is if you go into the big open marketplaces, some of the forums, some of the, you know, the eBay flipper type places, there will be people who focus their energies on working the system because that's where the people are, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a, I mean, in some of the marketplaces, there are some people that certainly hype up a sale to perhaps unsuspecting buyers. And yeah, look, just going, even if it's a low value site, just going through some of the due diligence checks that I mentioned, and also perhaps using some of the tools, James, that that you and I both use regularly. You know, for example, SEMrush. You know, if you can't get someone to give you Google Analytics data, for example, you can go and even use the free version of SEMrush.com to run a domain through SEMrush and see, you know, see where it's ranking for certain keywords in Google and get an idea, a basic idea of organic traffic as well.
Yeah, and Ahrefs as well might be another good free tool to just get a bit of a sneak peek at what could be ranking and what sort of links are pointing to the site.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few others that I had as well listed, James. So SEO Moz, they've got their own sort of, I guess, ranking tool. Obviously, looking at PageRank as well. Have a look at Alexa. Just a few tools to have a look at. Wayback Machine as well to check out the history. Just a few tools there to check on the validity of a domain and a site.
Excellent. I will give you a tip for buying mature domain names if it doesn't have a site on it. If you do put a WordPress site on the domain and then you install a plugin called DigiLink Doctor, then that will capture all of the links pointing to that domain from wherever they were up before if it has ever had a website on it, and it'll allow you to repair the links. You can send them to the correct page on your new site, or you can make them all go to the home page. But it's a really great catch-all for all of the links that might be out there that have been severed when someone sort of takes down a site and just has a domain sitting there.
Nice, good tip. Now, I mean, some of the things that you've already talked about, James, but some pointers for if you want to sell your website. When obviously that you're doing it at the moment, you've got quite a whole lot listed up there on VR. So what are some of the things that people should be divulging if they're selling a site?
Well, I sort of alluded to this. If I wanted to go to more effort, I would make more money selling my site. So there's two reasons why I haven't gone to way too much effort. Reason number one is I've got a big team and we're really focused on our most important parts of our business, and I can get a better return on our energy by focusing on those areas. And reason number two is something my grandfather taught me. It's always good to leave a little bit something in it for the next guy. And so by not being too greedy and not overselling the site, I'm probably not milking each domain to its full value. And I'm leaving something there to make it really obvious what the renovations are. Like, for example, one of the sites that had page one rankings for a particular phrase, it would cost more in SEO, 1 month's worth of SEO to get that ranking than the value of the whole domain and website. So it's an absolute bargain for someone in that market, which I'm not anymore. Yes, if you do want to do the basics, then the sort of things you would put together as a seller, the kind of process I've got in a little internal spreadsheet that we have, it's like set up in Google Docs. We go, okay, does the site have PageRank? Is the brand, is it valuable? Is it a really valuable, brandable sort of thing? Like if it's a two-word.com, that's sort of a check. You know, we don't want to just let that go too cheap. If it's a really good two-word brandable, like birdcages.com or something, that could be worth a whole lot more than just a crappy hyphenated .biz type domain. So we check brandability. And so that's more subjective, but I've got a yes or no tab for that. We have things like how many pages are indexed in Google. So, you know, is the site indexed at all? If it's slapped, then it may not be as valuable. But I have sold slap sites before, but I was upfront about it, and they were test sites, but they were on page one in Yahoo and MSN and still making really good AdSense income. So they were still valuable, but under the different context. Google seems to be the big benchmark, though. And then you have a look at, does it actually rank anywhere, you know, in google.com or .co.uk or .com.au, Yahoo or Bing? It's worth having a look. And then how many sites are ranked, how many sites are linking to this site? So backlinks are good because, you know, if people are interested in SEO and they pick up a site with lots of established backlinks, it is actually hard to go out and get backlinks that stick. It's expensive and time consuming. So to have that walk up start. Other things like little subtleties, you can look at the most recent cache date to see how fresh it is and if Google's paying attention to it. You can see if there's any earnings coming from it. One little basic step that we do with most of our parked sites is we put AdSense on them because AdSense will just give us a feel for potential. It shows us how many impressions the site's getting. It shows us the click-through rate, and it tells us if it's a real commercial market or not. Like, if one site's getting 16 visits and two people click, but it makes $6, like, hang on, what market's this? I want, you know, get me 10 more of those sites, you know? So, yeah. It's sort of like the little trap out there to find out where the potential might sit.
Canary.
It is, yeah. It's the coal miner's canary. So that's been a real optimization strategy of ours, is just to have these little things out there testing, and then we pull in the data occasionally, go, oh, isn't that interesting? I mean, I had one site that just absolutely went off the Richter scale. It was cranking in AdSense like a maniac. So, you know, I gave it to my team and said, develop this. Let's take this bigger, because it was something I wouldn't have found otherwise.
So when you do, as an aside, James, when you do that to your team, what are their steps to take it bigger? Is it mainly content creation?
Yep. They go and redesign content creation, optimize the ad positions, and then they start doing some traffic things to it. They'll make a YouTube video for it. They'll make an infographic for it. They'll write a press release for it. They'll get some links to it from some Web 2.0 stuff.
So kind of go through the traffic grab spaghetti bowl kind of process.
They will go through the octopus method.
Octopus method.
You heard it first.
Oh, geez, I'm looking forward to that one.
Could be traffic grab too, maybe.
Could be. You heard it here first, folks. Perhaps a couple of things I'd like to add, James, on selling a website. And I guess if you're thinking more along the lines, you know, the reverse of what we talked about earlier of selling a business, and maybe it's an online business, what are the sorts of things that you need to divulge to, I guess, maintain transparency and attract the right people to your sales? And that obviously, you know, some of the things you've talked about, page length, page rank, backlinks, Google Analytics data, you know, giving some proof of history, who is history, proof of revenue, you know, even if there's a profit and loss statement as well. Probably not something you provide up front, but if on request is something that you might want to give as well.
Yeah, the domain age was a good one. That's been the bulk of the ones I've sold lately are 3 and 4 years old, and that's a great advantage for someone.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.